Welcome to the Future of Healthcare, Live with Intent podcast with Thomas Reichart and Justin Tomlinson, authors of Live with Intent and architects of the LWI Learning Pathway. This week, Thomas and Justin talk with Fatima Doman, author, speaker, coach, and CEO of Authentic Strengths Advantage. As healthcare strives to shift from treatment of existing disease to holistic health and well-being, Fatima has made a significant contribution with her new book, Whole Life Well-Being.
Welcome, Fatima. Thank you for joining our podcast today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome. Great to hear you.
Thank you.
So congratulations on the release of your newest book, Whole Life Well-Being. And is that book number 4 for you?
It is.
Okay. So you're becoming very prolific. Maybe before we get into the contents of the book and the connections to healthcare, we could just learn a little bit more about you and what your story is.
So I came to this country when I was about 3 years old. I was born in Angola, Africa, and my family had to flee. War broke out in Angola, and luckily we were able to immigrate to the United States. My mother was a school teacher in Angola. When she came to the United States, obviously she didn't speak the language, and she went to work in turkey plants and canneries. My dad had a ranch in Angola. He went to work milking cows on dairies in the United States. And so it was quite a transition for our family, a very stressful time, but it also taught me a lot about, you know, the human psyche, and also about resilience and how to build that. I remember as a child, I just wanted to learn tools to feel more peaceful and to feel more energized about life. So I grew up in California and worked at the local university there, and later was recruited by Stephen Covey and his company to work for him, and taught the 7 habits all over the world, managed trainers, and that was really a shaping experience as well, working with the 7 habits of highly effective people and Stephen Covey. What a privilege that was. And then I eventually started writing my own books and started my own company that's based upon positive psychology principles.
Next to coming from Angola, coming from Portugal, the westernmost state in Europe and the country of the conquerors that were out to explore the world and ready to explore new ground. You, however, are connecting ancient wisdom with positive psychology today. Help us understand how you do that and why you do that. Does that connect to the principle-centered approach from Stephen Covey, or how does that connect?
I think I have this interest and this desire to really understand unchanging principles. And I believe that when we look for them, we can find them. And positive psychology, obviously, is about unchanging principles of human character. Things like love, kindness, leadership, teamwork, perseverance, creativity, curiosity. These are unchanging principles about what creates the good life for humanity. What is our highest and best self, our most noble self? So, it's all very similar and related. And that's what attracted me to positive psychology. So yes, this new book, Whole Life Well-Being, 7 Essential Elements, as I studied throughout history, all of the wisdom literature that I could get my hands on from around the world, you know, what have people written about throughout millennia that really explains and teaches us how to have a thriving, flourishing life? And it's connected to these 7 areas of well-being. I've distilled it into something that really connects to what are known also as the 7 energy centers in many writings around the world. So there are seven areas that I have found that contribute to a happy, fulfilling, satisfying life. And they are our environment, you know, creating a positive environment, our abundance, our sense of abundance, having enough, plenty, and our body, our physical health. And then our heart, I use the heart as a metaphor for self-love and also healthy relationships. And then there's the area of our contributions, which is, you know, what is it that we have to give to contribute to others that also makes our life richer by having given it. And then there's the area of the mind, you know, how do we create a more expansive, open mind and a sharper mind? And then I culminate with the area of the spirit. And it's not religious at all in nature, the way that I approach this. What I'm looking at is meaning, purpose, hope, gratitude, you know, awe, wonder, that inward journey. And those are the things that really fill us. And, you know, they're that elevated spiritual side of life. So those are the seven, what I call the seven essential elements to well-being. And I encourage people to take time to recharge each of those elements on a regular basis.
Before we go deeper in the content, when did you actually decide to start writing? When in life did that calling get to you?
So I think working with Stephen Covey was very influential in my decision to write books. Working closely with him, getting to know him, and just seeing how, you know, through writing and researching and sharing those ideas with others, we can impact a lot of lives. And that was my motivation. That was my inspiration, really.
One of the trends we see, Fatima, in healthcare, in, let's say, the big pharma sector, is this move from treating disease after the fact with medicines to thinking about the whole life, to think about well-being before people are sick, or in the case that they do get a disease, throughout the disease and after recovery, to look at the full life cycle of people. And that caught my attention just looking at the title of your book. Would be interested to hear, how do you connect these elements, these ideas, with the actual healthcare system?
So, you know, like you said in my introduction, we're a whole person living a whole life. That's one of the key aspects of this new book that I wrote, because I think it's so important. You know, we talk about whole life balance, but it's so much bigger than just whole life balance. It's about having a whole life. So one size doesn't fit all for people. And, you know, we all have very unique needs and different pathways to thriving. And I wanted to write a book that was holistic and addressed how people can really flourish in life and where those principles intersect for most people. You know, everybody applies principles differently in their own life. And I wanted people to just see all these different ways that they could recharge these things that are really important to them. I mean, if you stop and think about it, your environment, your abundance, your, you know, your body, your physical health, your relationships, your work, your contributions, your mind, your spirit. These are really the essence of what it means to have a life and to be human. So how can we really nurture those areas? How can we learn ways that have worked for many people and that are evidence-based? So what I did was, for each of these seven elements, I did a lot of research on, you know, what do studies from around the world, not just the West, teach us about how to really flourish in each of these seven areas, and how to have more energy and engagement in life, more vitality. And I share the research in the back of the book. There are footnotes throughout the book. And I also share a lot of anecdotal information, stories from real people, and how they were able to tap into these areas and recharge them and experience tremendous benefits from that.
I love your sentence, unchanging principles of human character, right? So imagine some of our listeners that are very busy in making patients' lives better and making an impact in their lives are in full cognitive overload, have enough work to do, and when you are in this overload, you know, you're happy to get by and just, you know, deal with what you got on your plate anyways and manage your inbox and manage your horizon projects that are right in front of you. And then looking at the seven energy areas, is it possible to break it down to say, if I can't go into all the depth, what's one thing I should do in the area of environment? In one sentence without comma, what would be your recommendation I should do if I'm in cognitive overload to get better at managing my environment?
That's a good question. So I would say create a sense of refuge and sanctuary for yourself, something that really brings out positivity in your environment.
Ah, wonderful. Thank you. And what about abundance? I'm just looking at what do I need to do? Knowing that I should go much deeper and study it deeper and understanding that principles do take time and they do take doing homework, but just to get started, what's the one thing I should do when it comes to abundance?
So recognize that you are creative, resourceful, and whole. And be grateful for what you have, because when you focus there, you create more of that by looking at and enjoying and taking in the sense of enough and plenty. You have the ability to then create even more.
So then I'm still in, you know, full force forward, serving patients, I got this body thing, right, to take care of.
Right.
And the older I get, the more I feel tired. So what should we do? What's the one thing we should do?
Well, the body is very complex. So it's a combination of nutrition, fitness, active relaxation, rest, recovery. I would say those are the core four principles. So remembering those core four principles and being kind to your body, it's the greatest gift you'll ever receive. And it deserves your love, respect, and attention.
Which is not really something I can delegate, right?
No, it's something that you have to do for yourself. And I would say for the body, the one thing that people forget the most, I'm a positive psychology coach, and I coach people who are really stressed out and burned out often. And one thing that they tend to forget about the body is active relaxation. People think, okay, yeah, I relax. I come home at the end of the day and I check out watching TV. But that's not really recharging your body. So active relaxation are things like yoga, meditation, deep breathing exercises. These are things that calm the parasympathetic nervous system and help you to relax on a deep level, on a cellular level even. So I think that it's important to consider active relaxation as part of taking care of your body, your physical body.
Hey, that's a cool concept. So that's easy. I can do that, right? And looking at self-compassion, self-love, healthy relationships, forgiveness, bravery. So my heart as the next energy center that you're addressing in the valuable work that you do. What's the one thing I should do if I'm overloaded anyways, but what's the one thing I should remember?
So I would say love for self and love for others. And I know that that sounds really lofty and it sounds like a touchy-feely, but really this whole concept of love is a core to who we are as human beings. As a matter of fact, I heard once a military general, you know, a story about a military general who, when he was coached about character strengths and about you know, tapping into his highest self, he discovered that his top strength was love. And here he was a 4-star military general. He thought, have I failed in some way? Isn't leadership supposed to be my number one strength? But actually, he came to see that if he tapped into this strength of love, it made him a much better general because he genuinely cared about the welfare of those that he led. So I don't think that, especially now post-pandemic, we can't discount this character strength of love. It's more important than ever, you know, taking the time to love and really nurture ourselves, have the compassion for ourselves, and then extending that to others. And it's difficult to extend it to others until you've extended it to yourself first. So I don't see this as soft. I see this as an urgent need, really, post-pandemic for everyone. We know that mental health crises and issues have more than doubled in 1 year around the world post-pandemic. So, you know, Harvard Health is reporting just a huge increase in people reporting their mental health issues. And a lot of what we can do about that, obviously, this is only one small part of the puzzle. Positive psychology is one small piece, but it's an important piece. And integral to positive psychology is this notion of self-love and also having compassion for others.
And is there a connection between self-love and self-talk for you as well?
Yes. There is. So when everyone experiences self-talk, and there are many books that have been written about this. Dr. Daniel Amen, who has written over 30 best-selling books about the brain, you know, talks about we tend to be wired toward negativity bias. We know that from considerable research. And people experience negative self-talk. He calls them automatic negative thoughts. But we can also experience positive self-talk. But because as human beings, we're wired toward negativity bias, that was a survival mechanism for us, kept us alive, looking for problems, trying to stay safe. That keeps us alive. But really, we need to learn in this modern environment that we live in, where we're not running from the saber-toothed tiger anymore, we need more than ever to infuse positivity into our lives. So we need to learn to cultivate what I call the inner coach. I call it the inner critic and the inner coach. So the negative self-talk is the inner critic. The positive self-talk is the inner coach. A lot of people haven't spent time tuning into the inner coach. They haven't spent time turning up the volume on positive self-talk. And we all need to learn how to turn down the volume on negative self-talk. So, for example, I was interviewed by Nathan Osmond, you know, Donny Osmond's nephew, for his podcast. And Nathan shared a story that I ended up putting in my new book. And his story was about when he performed in the Charlie Brown musical, and he had the lead role of Charlie Brown. And, you know, this was a Broadway musical. It was big time. And he put his heart and soul into learning the Charlie Brown role. And the Charlie Brown role was very self-deprecating, constantly putting himself down. And guess what? During that time in his life, he was still in school. He was young, right? During that time in life, his grades went down. All that language, all that self-deprecating language that he was practicing for his role and repeating over and over and over again, he started to see it play out in his life, literally. So he said the words, I am, a lot, followed by negative statements. And so I've written in each of my latest books a whole section on the power of the words I am. Because when we say the words I am, I think we need to be very conscious about what follows that and select something that lifts us, that affirms us, that helps us to be our best self, instead of following the words I am with something that puts us down. So that is I think, a core principle, our self-talk, our language. And there's actually a whole science around it too. It's a subset of positive psychology. It's the field of appreciative inquiry. And they have found that when we focus on and speak things that are appreciative, that our language creates our reality.
Thank you. No better way to confirm our chapter on communication called Language Creates Reality, right? The Live with Intent principle on communication. So nice to see that you connect that to the energy piece of heart.
One of the things that I found really effective in this book is this idea of the inner critic versus the inner coach, and just switching from critic to coach and realizing that actually I can be my own coach. And if I'm intentional about that, it has a tremendous power for well-being in my life. And I really liked how you brought that framework through all of these concepts and gave really tangible ideas and contrast between what that actually means.
Right. So who's the one person that's with you all the time? You. So why not empower yourself to be your best coach? I've been a coach to people for over 20 years. You know, that's what I've been doing all this time. And yet, you know, I don't want people to feel like they have to call me and say, hey, you know, what do you think about this? About many things in life. I want to empower them with tools so that they can do that for themselves. And that's the principle of being a coach to yourself rather than a critic to yourself. And I have learned in my own life, trust me, I've had plenty of experiences with the self-critic and challenges, difficult moments in my life, difficult years. And I think that we can learn these skills and we can empower ourselves with these skills. It's doable. And like I said, it's one piece of that puzzle of well-being. There's so much to it. And I'm not discounting, you know, the medical aspect of it, the psychiatric aspect, or what, you know, there are professionals for well-being, especially mental well-being, and that we need to, you know, if anyone out there is feeling that they're overwhelmed and they really need help beyond just reading, you know, books, absolutely get the help that you need. And in addition to that, learn some skills. So get the professional help that you need. If you feel you need that medical or professional help, absolutely. Or if you know someone who needs that, encourage them to get that help. And in addition to that, learn some skills that will continue to fortify you throughout your life. And positive psychology is a new science that offers some wonderful tools.
Yeah, and I think if I and others can just pick up that shift from inner critic to inner coach, that's a big one. That's a foundational one for our well-being. I loved your story, Fatima, about driving to the TV studio with sweaty palms and feeling anxious about how this was all going to go. And the shift for you was just talking to yourself saying, Fatima, just focus on contribution. Think about how you can help people. And that flip to just wanting to contribute and help people took the anxiety away. And this concept of contribution is foundational in our Live with Intent concept, and helping people to think about their professional lives in terms of their contribution, not their role or their title or their position. I really resonated with this element in your book around contribution, and would love to follow on Thomas's pattern of why is that so important and what's the one thing I should start with?
So when we focus on ourselves only, we leave out a crucial motivating factor, because we are social by nature. And so without the tie to others and what we're doing, many people don't have enough long-term motivation to keep them going. And we know from the science that human beings thrive when those around them thrive as well. So, you know, if you hang out with people with really unhealthy behaviors, you're probably going to adopt some of those unhealthy behaviors. But if you hang out with people who have healthy behaviors and, you know, are positive in nature and all of those things, you know, the food they eat, the exercise they get, just everything that they're doing for themselves is nurturing, you're probably going to have, you know, experience greater health as well. So I see myself, and I encourage people to see themselves as a contribution to others rather than just accomplishing the goal for themselves, because then whatever we do, it's powered by something greater than ourselves. You know, we're tapping into the collective energy. So creating value and fulfillment for others in turn creates value and fulfillment for me. And it launches me into what's called in positive psychology, the positive upward spiral. It's that upward momentum. It's the law of reciprocity as well. So what goes around comes around. And when we're looking, as a matter of fact, I just read an article like a week or two ago about new research that shows that people in the workforce who are givers tend to be more successful because they're generous. They're looking for ways to contribute. And others tend to trust them more. They have stronger relationships at work. And then when they really need something, others are more willing to come, you know, to the table and share as well. So givers are more successful. And that's this whole notion of contribution. How can we be givers more consistently in all that we do?
I love that. And on the gateway to the university I attended, there was a saying that was something like, service is the rent we pay for living this life. And this whole idea of contribution, of service, of being part of something bigger than yourself, I do think that's a key to well-being.
Yeah. And some studies have actually shown that people who give service, who are engaged in some type of, you know, collective service group, or they tend to live longer than those who don't. So it really, there's a boost to our immune system. And when we're coming out of a pandemic, I mean, who doesn't want to boost their immune system? So boosting our immune system, obviously the food we eat, the way we treat our bodies, but also there's that mind-body connection that cannot be ignored. And we literally boost our immune systems by cultivating positive emotions.
It sounds to me like there is not just an ROI of trust, but also an ROI of contribution. And I listen to you.
I believe there is. And now there are hundreds of studies that are showing connections to all of these principles I've been talking about.
So the next energy field you are addressing with mind is at the center of a lot of transformations in organizations today. At the center of transformation is the topic of mind, of being open-mindedness, of mindset, of adapting. What's your one advice, Fatima, for leaders, for contributors, that the least thing they want to do is change their mindset now midstream? They just want to, you know, get on with things that they know are right. And however, there's a need to, again, adapt mindset. What should we do if we are confronted with having to change our mindset yet again?
Well, I think we have all learned over the past year and a half of this pandemic that anything can change at any time. So it makes it a really profound case for becoming a lifelong learner, doesn't it? You know, just that the ever-changing essence of life makes a compelling case for being more curious, more open-minded, open to new ideas. That lifelong learning So wisdom is an outgrowth. I've had people ask me, you know, what do you know about wisdom? Well, you know, in all of your studies, what have you learned about wisdom? And so in reading a lot of literature around wisdom, it's the result of experience. And experience comes from being curious, from being open to new learning, from being, you know, open-minded, and then also using this wonderful tool, this brain that helps us to reason, helps us to have, you know, imagine something better than what we're experiencing right now. So then we can start creating it. So all of these principles of the mind are related, and it's very important to nurture the mind. You know, it's not just you go to college and you're done learning. It's a lifelong pursuit.
Is it a difficult connection to make within organizations to talk about wisdom?
So, you know, I teach workshops and certifications and things like that in companies. And I have had lately people asking a lot about wisdom that I hadn't heard so much, you know, in years previous. And I think that people had, during COVID, they had a lot of time for introspection. And they're wanting to bring all of that learning together. And they're wanting to make sense of what they've just gone through. And they're hoping to emerge wiser, right? We all are. We've been through a difficult time, and we're all wanting to feel that we've gained something at least from that those trying times. And I think that wisdom is the outgrowth of that, you know. And I want to encourage people too, you know, if you had times where you felt you fell short or failures, you know, those are opportunities to really go to a higher level. So I would encourage people not to be hard on themselves and see those, you know, almost even with gratitude. Look at those learning experiences as opportunities to gain more wisdom. So every day is a new start, and even the mistakes that we've made in the past can propel us to greater victories in the future. And I would encourage people to really look at the experience that they've gained, even if they've had bumps along the road, as a gift, and use it for their growth.
Thanks for connecting to the inner journey. We see a shift as well in leadership teams that they're less speaking about technical issues, more talking about the conscious issues and consciousness in the way they lead, right? In the way leadership or management is being performed or carried out or shaped. The inner journey, however, connects us to your next energy topic, if I understand right from your book.
Yeah. So this, the element of the spirit, the human spirit. And yes, it's all about that inward journey. And I just finished writing an article that I'll be posting in Thrive Global about hope, cultivating hope in 2021, because that's a key element of that inward journey of, you know, nurturing your spirit. So hope and optimism, what does that have to do with work? I think it has everything to do with work, you know. And those of you who are out there, you go to work and spend more time with those people than you do at home with your own families. And so if we can create more hope, more optimism in those places of work, we're serving ourselves as well as others. And I go into different ways that we can do that. We can become a positive contagion. And, you know, we're so focused on contagions over the last year and a half. Well, how about becoming a positive contagion to help to diffuse the negativity that's been all around us for quite some time?
This might sound strange, but one of, if not the part I enjoyed most about the book is the very ending in your acknowledgments. because I just found, as I read through your acknowledgments, almost a manifestation of the application of the whole life and the depth of relationship and feeling and the way you expressed yourself to your husband, your boys, your parents, your work colleagues. It just resonated with me that that's a life well lived. And I enjoyed that very much.
Thank you. None of us achieves anything on our own. You know, we all stand on the shoulders of others. And, we all help to carry each other at different times. We inspire each other at different times. And I'm very grateful to the people in my life who have helped me. And hopefully I can pass that on and be those things for other people as well. Collectively, we're stronger together.
Well, thank you, Fatima. What a wonderful time it's been to connect with you on those principles that bring energy, that enable energy. Speaking to you is like a breath of fresh air of how great life can be with more energy.
It was such a pleasure to be with both of you, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I really think that the work that you're doing is starting to become the front seat rather than the back seat of the way we think about healthcare. And not only for the healthcare professionals that we have addressed in this discussion, but people in general, people, all of us who will probably one day also be patients. I think there's some real wisdom in tending to these elements that you've described. So thank you for your spirit of contribution and your sharing.
Thanks. It was my pleasure.
Now let's turn to Thomas and Justin for a brief reflection on today's discussion.
What's interesting to me is how much the seven habits and this idea of principle-centeredness has gotten into the DNA of all of us who have worked with Stephen Covey. And the way it shaped our lives and the way it has shaped our contribution, and the legacy continues with our work, a whole group of us beyond that company who continue to try to serve by enhancing the well-being of people. That's fascinating to me.
Me as well. And I love the connection of unchanging principles of human character. You know, we could add to that, we are in a world with constant dynamic change. How comforting it is to know that there's unchanging principles, and just to see what happens with colleagues that take unchanging principles to heart and go deep. You see with Fatima, what she's done, she went deep with unchanging principles. And, you know, what she's come up with, the value she's creating, the people she's inspiring, the people she's touching, her influence continues to be exponential.
Yes, she has gone deep. And what makes it impactful is she has also made it simple. So the way that she's framed and put this content together is easy to absorb and easy to apply. I think that's actually the value creation in the way she's condensed all that research into some practical ways that you and I and others can think about, for example, the inner critic versus the inner coach. Just that simple concept that weaves throughout the whole book was really valuable.
And then knowing, as you have your horizon and strive towards your horizon or your team's horizon, there is an ROI of contribution. There is an ROI as you build that contribution. It's worth it. I love her way, how she connects it with service and all the positive implications service has to us, to our immune system, to our personal psychology. As she says, upward spiral.
Yeah, we'll have to stay in touch. Oh, we forgot to tell her happy birthday. So happy birthday, Fatima.
To all of our listeners, thank you for listening. Our desire is to explore and contribute to the future of healthcare by applying the principles of Live with Intent.
For more information on the future of healthcare, Live with Intent, go to www.livewithintent.eu. This podcast was produced by Madeline May.